Connect with others in the Awaken Therapist community and join us over on Patreon. When you become a member of the Awaken Therapist community, you'll gain access to exclusive teachings, consultations, and resources. Find out more at awakentherapist.com. There are so many things that I could say about being a therapist in romantic relationship. It's definitely one of the most common questions that I get. And I think it's because we cultivate so much capacity to see other people clearly, to attune to the field around us. And when we're developing these skills in service of therapeutic relationship and facilitating therapeutic transformation, it's really common to begin to see the patterns in the people in our lives, their habitual way that they turn away from contact, or the patterns that they are replaying from their unfinished business from the past. And when we see these patterns, there's this impulse to want to bring that awareness to the people in our lives, let them know how they seem to us. But where we are a mirror for our clients to see themselves more clearly, to bring awareness to their unfinished business, to bring awareness to the way they disrupt contact with the here and now, our relationships actually serve as a mirror for us. If we're not looking in the mirror of relationship, we are in all likelihood projecting. And this is a really important nuance of being a therapist who sees clearly that when we see the people in our lives clearly, if we aren't in contact with ourselves and looking within ourselves, the thing that we're seeing is true within the people in our lives or with our partner. But if we aren't in contact with ourselves and we're only looking at them, we are also projecting simultaneously, which is to say that the thing that we're seeing in the person in our lives is in all likelihood probably true. But if we aren't looking within ourselves to see what is happening within us, what unmet need we have within, what emotion within us needs tending to, how to stay in contact with ourselves, then we're disrupting contact with the people in our lives by projecting onto them, disowning something inside of us and putting it onto them. So when we're sitting with our clients, the container is in service of their transformation. But when we are in intimate relationship, the reciprocal nature of romantic partnership requires that we look within, that we tend to our own inner world, and then that we vulnerably ask for what it is that we're wanting or that what we're needing. Of course, we can share what we're seeing or perceiving in others, but when we do it from a place of projection, we are more likely to enter into an entanglement pattern or even a habitual pattern of playing the role of therapist, rescuer, or helper in our intimate relationships, as opposed to cultivating deep, mature, wise, reciprocal relationships with our loved ones. So, cultivating awareness of the complexity of humanity and the complexity of human relating can really serve our relationships. It's really useful to understand Gestalt principles of disrupting contact and unfinished business, and also intuition that arises from the subliminal field. You know, the way that I teach countertransference is intuition, or the way that psychodynamic describes projective identification, where something that a person in our life can't feel or identify unconsciously, they induce that feeling in us by the way that they treat us. So, for example, if somebody is feeling really scared, they might become volatile or angry in an unconscious attempt to induce that fear inside of us. And that's just intuitive information about what's happening in the people in our lives. And all of that is so useful. Like in this example of projective identification, if I'm able to stay connected to myself and say, I notice I feel scared right now when the person is yelling at us, then we're staying connected to ourselves and they might be able to see that they feel scared too. Or we can even just ask, I'm wondering, do you feel scared? And so that creates a bridge of connection as opposed to being in the reactive cycle and putting all of our attention on the other person. And so learning how to meet the people in our lives at the contact boundary, what I call the sacred boundary, where they are in their sovereignty and we are in our sovereignty, and we're doing the dance of being engaged in this dynamic living relationship, there's a very different quality. And it's a very subtle difference, but it is the difference where the relationship becomes a nourishing place for us to transform, as well as for the people in our lives to feel deeply loved as they are. So I want to invite you to just take a moment to think about a dynamic in your relationship, even if it's a relationship that you feel very resourced by. Or it can be a relationship that you feel very drained by, a friendship, a partnership, a family member. Maybe you can see the way that they deflect or evade emotional presence. Maybe you're in relationship with somebody who has narcissistic traits and they lack empathy or they discount what's happening for you. Maybe you notice your own codependent patterns where you feel responsible for regulating other people and taking care of their needs without even knowing what it is that you need. Maybe there's a conflict avoidant pattern where when something doesn't feel aligned and nourishing for you, you hide what's happening to try to keep the peace or maintain some sort of balance while simultaneously building some inner resentment. Or maybe you play the role of the fixer or the therapist or the caretaker in your relationship while the other person receives your attention and care, and the reciprocal nature doesn't feel balanced. In this relationship, what you want from the other person is a mirror for you to look within and begin to give that very thing to yourself. So, if you're in relationship with somebody who deflects or avoids emotional presence and you're longing for attention and connection, turning toward yourself and giving yourself that attention, not turning away and deflecting and evading your own longing, right? Turning toward your own longing for attention, giving yourself attention, and really being connected and present with yourself is the entry point to deepening intimacy with the people in your life. Now, that might seem counterintuitive because the other person still is deflecting and still is evading. But if you focus on them, this is where you begin to come off balance from yourself, and all of your attention goes to the other person, trying to get the other person to be different so that you don't have to feel whatever it is that you're feeling. So, if you take this information and look in the mirror of relationship and turn toward yourself and give yourself the thing that you want from the environment, you begin to repair your own attachment system. You begin to return to deep contact within yourself. And this is the entry point to resolving unfinished business. To be clear, I'm not saying that you don't ask for your needs to be met from the environment. That is also important. But what I'm suggesting here is that you begin by repairing internally, giving yourself what it is that you need, letting your inner young one know that I will always tend to you, that you're important to me. And then from this place, asking the person in your life for attention. I'm noticing that I feel lonely. You seem distracted. I'm wondering, are you willing to give me attention? I would really love some attention right now. And if the person in your life is responsive to your needs, then you have an opportunity to amplify that repair even more deeply. And so, really receiving that attention from the environment, receiving it deeply into your attachment system, something fundamentally begins to shift and integrate in a very beautiful, beautiful way. So learning to stay anchored in your own experience without self-abandoning to maintain harmony or to try to get your needs met in some other unconscious or implicit way. This is about being in conscious relationship with the people in our lives and cultivating a reciprocal connection, which may be less possible if you're in a relationship with a narcissistic partner. So, in that case, if you're in a relationship with somebody who lacks empathy, criticizes you for having needs, wants your attention and your care, but doesn't offer you attention and care, or doesn't respond to your requests for attention and care, this is a really, really potent training ground to learn how to reclaim what it is that you've disowned within yourself. So typically, who we attract into our lives and who we are attracted to, if we haven't done our deep work, they actually reflect our unintegrated shadow. And so when we're looking in the mirror of relationship and we're in a relationship with a narcissistic partner, they are embodying what we've disowned. Meaning, the place within us that knows that what we need matters, that we matter, can get so pushed down into the shadow when we haven't yet integrated what we have disowned within ourselves as a survival strategy growing up, when we were developing our sense of self. We can see that part of ourselves that we've disowned in our partner. And so the work is actually the same, to turn toward ourselves and say, I will always care about what you need. Even if I'm unsure about what you need, and this is, to the inner young one, I will always care. And this is the reparenting that is so powerful and so integrating. We're turning towards ourselves and saying that we matter too. That even though we can see this pattern in somebody else, our work is not to change our partner. Our work is to create deep intimacy where we meet the environment at the contact boundary. So instead of walking on eggshells to avoid activating our partner or betraying ourselves and abandoning ourselves to take care of them in an attempt to have safety and calm in our home or in our relationship. Instead, we disrupt the homeostasis of that pattern by honoring that what we need matters. And if our partner in this situation isn't interested in changing, we have an opportunity to really get in touch with what it is that we need. And, as I say that, it sounds really simple, but as somebody who has been down that road several times in my own life, I'll say that the stickiness and the confusion and the murkiness and the genuine love that we feel for our partner, even though they are acting in ways that are harmful and critical and reductive to the essence of who we are, can create a lot of confusion. There can be this like desire to get back to the love, to get more of that love and let this other painful part of the relationship heal and fix and manage in some way. And if somebody genuinely wants to change and shows up for the work and does their own emotional labor, then that's beautiful. But as therapists, we often are doing the emotional labor for the people in our lives. And that's really what I'm pointing to here. That is not our work to do. Remembering that Gestalt focuses on the present moment, whole person, embodied awareness within the relational context, as opposed to fixing or analyzing or changing somebody else, our intimate relationships really call on us to embody this even more. To engage in relationship from our wholeness, which is what I'm suggesting here, integrating our disowned shadow, being whole in our complexity, in our vulnerability, and honoring the people in our lives as sovereign beings who will grow and change of their own volition when they show up to do that work for themselves. Again, I'm not saying that we're not offering a reflection to the people in our lives. But what I am saying is that it is important that when we do, we are really embodying these deeper principles of Gestalt, where we are in full contact with ourselves, with all of who we are, and that we're seeing clearly, and that what we're seeing isn't skewed by the veil of a projection, which can get so confusing in relationships. It's a very tender, nuanced place to navigate. And so the first step is really tuning into what you're noticing arising within you as you engage with another person. This is really where you have the opportunity to respond from contact as opposed to react from your survival instinct that wants this other person to be a safe space for you, even though they haven't developed the capacity to do that yet. Oftentimes, this is where we can be surprised by the people in our lives, because when we are in contact with ourselves and we, reach out for connection by sharing what's happening with us, the people in our lives can often surprise us by being responsive. And this is where we're confronting our own meaning making and our own stories of unfinished business, where we think that they can't, but in truth, they actually can. And we get to update that narrative and start to evolve more deeply in the dynamic living organism of relationship. It can be just so beautiful. The other piece of Gestalt that is here in our personal relationship is the figure ground principle, where we shift awareness between what's the most pressing, so the figure, and the ground, which is the contextual environment. So when we're in a relational entanglement pattern or a conflict, something becomes amplified within us, that's the figure. And then there is the broader relational landscape that is here. And this is where we can shift from hyper-identification with our ordinary mind to opening into awake awareness and seeing the bigger picture that's present. That also includes our experience. This doesn't mean that we're bypassing what's here for us. It means that we can honor the complexity of what's happening here, as opposed to hooking into one aspect that seems the most pressing. The other part of Gestalt that I'm pointing to here is self-responsibility and the language of self-responsibility. So owning that what we're experiencing or that what we're seeing is ours without blaming another person. So we're not saying, you make me feel like my needs don't matter. Instead, we can say, I'm noticing that I'm having a hard time sharing my needs because I have a story that my needs don't matter. So really honoring that that is ours, building that self-responsibility through our language patterns. I really think that language is so important. It shares so much about what's happening within us and where we're speaking from. Like, we can hear the younger self or the unfinished business or the projection or the interjections through language. However, we can be messy. It's not that we need to get our language perfect. It's just about being in the practice of noticing how we're speaking, and we're not the language police. We're not, managing or shaming other people for the way they're talking. We're really just reducing blame through our ownership language. I like to give the example of if we're all in the same room and I say, it's so hot in here. And in that, I'm disowning my experience and I'm saying, my experience is the experience. As opposed to saying, I notice I feel hot. If I say it's hot in here, the other people in the room might say, actually, I'm cold, or I think it's perfect. And we all are having a different experience within the same room. This is obviously different when we're in relationship and we're talking about the other person, and I'm saying it feels hostile. So the it is objectifying the other person, and I'm saying that how they seem to me is a feeling, which is also just another way that language can manipulate what's actually happening. And I'm speaking about them, not me. And so the language of feeling maybe alludes to I'm feeling this, but really I'm talking about the other person. Another example would be, I feel like you don't care, right? You not caring is not something I'm feeling. It's a sort of manipulative way that language can camouflage projections. And again, if somebody in our life says it feels like you don't care to us, we're not going to change their language or tell them to say it differently or tell them we're only going to hear them if they own their experience as theirs. Instead, we're going to hear, like, it sounds like you're needing care right now. And although that might sound a little therapizing, it's actually an intimate moment where we're offering a bridge of love and connection. When the nervous system is dysregulated, we forget that we're on the same team and that we want the same thing. And if we genuinely want a relationship to be healthy and loving, then sometimes, and it's often the therapist in the relationship, we are the relational leader. And so we're not therapizing our partner, but we are caring for them and attuning to them with love. And this is really nonviolent communication, where when somebody is dysregulated and they've disconnected from their needs, we can offer that deep connection of empathy and attunement. It's really a beautiful gift to the people in our lives. And it's different from trying to get them to change. And if we are also in touch with what we feel and what we want, the connection that happens there is beyond anything that we could make happen from our mind or from our impulses and our habits of our younger self. It's important to remember that our neuroception is scanning the environment for threats to safety. And when our amygdala senses that our partner is judging us, is incongruent, is activated, and might become a physical threat, even if we consciously know that won't happen, if our amygdala senses that that might happen, we feel unsafe. And also unknowns. So I'll say it again: judgment, incongruence, physical threats, and the unknown. And the nervous system loves certainty and familiarity. And so when we're doing something different and trying a different movement in our relationships, the vulnerability that we feel can be quite scary. And so it requires that we transcend our survival instinct to stay connected with ourselves, to turn towards ourselves, as opposed to trying to get the need met from the environment first. This is really an entry point into co-regulation, similar to when we're working with our clients. And especially if you've trained with me, you know that I really value co-regulation and building inner resources and a strong inner foundation before doing the deeper work. I want to know that my clients have contact with themselves before we start doing an experiment. And it's the same thing for myself, and it's the same thing that I'm suggesting for you, that you build your inner resources, you regulate your nervous system, you become the safe space for yourself, you offer yourself the conditions of love and safety that you want for the environment, instead of gaslighting yourself or cognitively bypassing yourself or spiritually bypassing yourself or projecting onto the environment. And again, it can sound like I'm simplifying this. I understand that it's so challenging in relationship, but I also understand the potential and the beauty and the intimacy and the growth and the open-heartedness that is available there too, from my own lived experience as a person and also from supporting clients in this deep, beautiful, sacred, profound work. So I love creating experiments for myself, and I just want to encourage you to do the same if you feel so inclined. I think that because the nervous system loves what's familiar and what's certain, creating social experiments for ourselves to try something different can really create a whole new potential for us in this world. It's been some of my favorite experiences that I've had when I'm tracking my pattern. So, for example, my ego pattern very much matches the description of an Enneagram type 2. And when I first started tracking those patterns in myself, I would create experiments where I just didn't do the familiar thing. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I just knew that I wasn't going to do that familiar thing anymore. And I would do this for myself when the stakes were kind of high, when I was at a social event where I didn't know people or was going to go on a first date with somebody. And I would use these experiences as like a training ground to stay in contact with myself. And some of my biggest transformation happened in these social experiments. So I would encourage you to just try that. The other thing is, I love coming up with sentence stems. And this, of course, comes from my time in the authentic relating community. But two sentence stems that I've come up with that I find extremely valuable in my own personal development are as follows. So the first one is, when I notice my attachment system is activated, I think about filling in this sentence stem of, when I feel blank, my inner young one needs blank from me. So, for example, when I feel anxious for connection, my inner young one needs attention from me. Very simple, but it really does help me repair the attachment system from when I didn't get the attention that I needed. And I become that reparative figure for myself. The other sentence stem actually gets to the polarity that we're often working out in relationship. And I came up with this sentence stem actually when I wrote my second book, Align, Living and Loving from the True Self, which is a self-help book. I came up with this sentence stem to highlight the ways that we leave alignment, that we leave contact, so that we can work with that polarity within ourselves. And so the sentence stem is, I cling to blank so I don't have to feel blank. So, for example, if you have codependent tendencies, the sentence stem might be, I cling to taking care of other people so I don't have to feel unworthy of love. So, these are some ways to help illuminate our own patterns in relationship that can be really, really transformative and profound. It's important to remember that we are wired for connection. We are social beings that we're designed to want safe, reciprocal relationships that feel loving and consistent and supportive and a resource in our lives. Relationships are intended to be a resource in our life, not a drain. And when we are a therapist and we, use our nervous system and our awareness and our energy to hold space for other people, learning how to receive love, receive care, receive attention can be a really, really important growing edge. Similar to our work with clients, where we're co-creating the therapeutic container, we are co-creating this relationship with our romantic partners, with our loved ones, with our children, with our family, with our friends. Relationship is a co-creation. And in order for us to actually meet others at that contact boundary, we must be in contact with ourselves and reveal ourselves to others, show ourselves vulnerably, let them know what's happening inside of us. It's not about being perfect, it's not about getting it right all the time. I know therapists often have a very high standard for ourselves. Other people have a higher standard for us because we're therapists, and yet we're human. We have nervous systems that become dysregulated. We have unfinished business. We have attachment wounds. We have our own experiences to navigate. And intimate partnerships are just such a wonderful place to really discover the depths of our humanity. I hope you enjoyed this bonus episode. I am just, I get this question all the time from students, and I wanted to address it more clearly here. I hope it was useful. And as always, if you have any questions or comments, you can reach out on Patreon. There's a chat feature there. I'm always happy to answer questions. Even as a free member on Patreon, you can type into the chat and I'm happy to answer any of your questions. The Awaken Therapist Level 1 certification is starting September 2025. In the 6-month training, you'll learn how to unlock the magic of psychotherapy. Join us in exploring deeper dimensions in your work with clients with less burnout. To learn more, check out our trainings at awakentherapist.com.